You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, now available on iTunes. Hit the subscribe button and never miss an episode. We are also available on Audio Boom and Mixcloud, while Android users can find us on Pocket Casts and Podcast Republic. Enjoy the show and thanks for listening.
You're all very welcome to episode 15 of the Between the Stripes LOI podcast. We're back with another star-studded show for you tonight. Two League of Ireland legends joining us on the show. John, do you want to tell the folks at home what they can look forward to tonight?
Well, that word legend is bandied about a lot, but these two guests that we've got on this week, they definitely deserve it. We've got Derry City striker Rory Patterson. He scored goals wherever he's been.
A goal machine, John, only word to describe him.
And the second guest we've got on, he's played for Sligo Rovers. He's played, would you believe, over 500 appearances for Sligo, and that 500th was against Longford Town. Raf Cataro came.
Raf Cataro, yeah, man, very decorated player within the League of Ireland. So, going to be a pleasure for us to speak to those two League of Ireland legends. And we'll also be joined by Ger Kevill from YBIG. He's going to discuss the Republic of Ireland's two World Cup qualifiers coming up. Our fate's going to be decided this week, folks. Game against Moldova in the Aviva on Friday, and then a trip to Cardiff on Monday.
And you need a favour from us, Kieran.
We need a favour from the English, John. So if you could get that draw, a win, you need to win that game. And we need the Scots to slip up in their one. That's probably the most likely situation. I'm not going to run through the other ones because they're just going to give everyone a headache. It's just way too confusing. But yeah, that's this week's lineup for you folks. So sit back, enjoy, and episode 15 is here. So we're going to kick the show off tonight, John, by talking about the two massive FAI Cup semi-finals just gone by. And we'll start at Turner's Cross, where Cork City had a hard-fought 1-0 win over local rivals Limerick.
Yeah, Kieran, close game this. I think a lot of people expected a simple enough Cork win, but I know you were tipping Limerick as well, weren't you, for this one? So, look, it started off, well, Buckley missed a sitter. There's a great pullback to him from Cal Shepherd. He missed a sitter, but he made amends after that with the first goal. And again, that man, Cal Shepherd, setting him up. He's been impressive this season, Cal Shepherd.
Yeah, and I thought it'd be later in the show before we mention it, John, but you've thrown his name out there straight away. So in the papers today, Cal Shepherd linked with a move to Dundalk. That would be a huge blow to Cork City for next season. But just on the present at the moment, that was a fantastic team goal by Cork. One of the team goals of the season for me. It was so simplistic, but just so efficient. And it was a really good display from Limerick, I thought. I didn't think the quality in this game was as high as the game we seen Friday night, but certainly it's still a really enthralling and a high tempo game of football. Limerick probably unlucky not to get a replay in the end, but Cork just showing that bit of class.
Yeah, well, we've given them plenty of plaudits this season, that front two for Limerick, and sure enough, it was that man Rodrigo Tosi. He went very, very close with a looping header that just went over the bar. Yeah. They had the chances, but Cork just did enough to win it 1-0, and the double is still on, Kieran.
I wonder, was that John Caulfield ringing to say don't be linking Cairn Shepherd with a move to Dundalk? But yeah, the double is still on for Cork, and as we said on last week's show, Dundalk will be desperate to stop Cork doing that, because it would be a real show of their strength, you know, mentality wise for next season. It would give them a big boost. We've seen how important the cup win in the final last year was for Cork in terms of starting off this season with a real, you know, we can do this, we can overturn Dundalk as mighty as they are. So Dundalk will be desperate to stop from Cork claiming back-to-back FAI Cups, but Cork are into the final, and we'll move on to Oriel, John.
Just before that, Kieran, there was again that question came up when I saw that performance, and that Cork, they really are missing a front man. They haven't replaced Maguire. I think they really need to go all out and get a striker for next season. So is there any possible names that you could maybe link them with? Maybe if Cal Shepherd's going the other way, maybe a Dave McMillan, maybe one that I thought no, might be one they'd go for.
I'd imagine that's highly unlikely, John. I'd imagine a contract will be sorted out quite soon for McMillan. Obviously, we heard before that Rosenborg game that they were interested last season in bringing McMillan to the club. So yeah, that shows the real class of the man. He's still behind Sean Maguire in the goal scoring charts by 5 goals. He'll be desperate to try and claw him back before the season is out. So I'd see that as highly unlikely. In terms of other names, as we've said before on the show, for the likes of Cork and Dundalk, it's really hard to improve their squads, because the quality is just in the teams below them in the table. It's just that little step below. Obviously, there's obviously always the two standout players in opposition teams. But in terms of a massive pool of talent, there's really not top quality players to pick from. So if Cork are going to lose these players, it's going to be a massive rebuilding job for John Caulfield.
I'm going to give you a name here, Curtis Byrne.
He's been fantastic for St. Pat's this season, John, but I wouldn't see him as a natural striker, in all honesty with you. I'm just going to peek into your notes there. I see you have Rory Patterson's name wrote down, and that was actually on my mind this week. He's a man that's done so much in this league, scored so many goals everywhere he's been, and I'm surprised there hasn't really been more interest shown in him, but maybe it's because Derry City just simply won't let him go. We'll have to see how that plays out. There's obviously no concrete speculation. We're just throwing names out here, but yeah, wow, what a player he would be for Cork City.
Yeah. So look, it's still a question for me. They still need to replace Maguire, so they're going to have to do something. That's what the, I think it's just Jonko at end of season just has to go all out and get somebody.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there, John. And obviously, as we mentioned on last week's show as well, they're probably going to lose Delaney back to Burton, and a couple of other players there, Greg Bulger as well. I know he isn't always a starter, but still a key man in that squad. So it's going to be all over the field, and we've seen the issues of Dundalk having to try and replace their top player. So massive job on John Caulfield's hand for next season, but he has to focus on finishing this season first. They still haven't claimed that league title. They should do that in the next coming weeks. They're in an FAI Cup final, so big games coming up for Cork City. But on to Ariel, John.
Indeed. Robbie Benson up in the scoring for Dundalk. Serious move from Dundalk.
I've changed my mind. I said that Cork one should be a contender for a team goal of the season. That goal by Dundalk was
brilliant, wasn't it? Yeah. And I like Benson. You know, he's end-to-end. He's got a great engine on him. It's been a great acquisition for Dundalk.
One of the most underrated players in the League of Ireland for me, John. He's been in the League of Ireland quite for a number of years with UCD and Athlone even. Yeah. And he always stood out to me as a real talented player. Stephen Kenny's taken him under his wing, and he's just improved his game untold amounts. We've even seen in Europe his performances over the last couple of years, how impressive they've been. So for me, Benson could be a player that could even go across the water yet.
Well, that wouldn't surprise me. I think he's really good. Yeah,
but Dundalk made such a great start to that game, John, and it looked like we talked about that on last week's show, that we both predicted a comfortable maybe a repeat of the EA Cup final, and when that goal went in by Benson, that looked to be on the cards. But to credit the Shamrock Rovers, they dug in.
And Gary Rogers made a cracking save from Ronan Finn.
Another player that's been hugely improved this season, Gary Rogers. He's had a fantastic season.
It was a super save, to keep him out. Rovers really pressed after that that opener, and that man Brandon Mealy equalised deservedly. They were on top again. Ronan Finn crossing the ball and Mealy finishing it.
Yeah, Finn getting man of the match, which sent the away end into raptures in Oriel Park.
I'm sure he did.
Rubbing salt in the wounds, but obviously it's not over yet. It'll be a replay decided on Tuesday in Tala, and I'm sure Finn will be looking to recreate that. But we spoke about the importance of Mila and Finn stepping up in these big games, and they certainly did that in Ori.
They did, and they needed them, and that's what's got them the replay there. But we have to talk about this red card, Kieran.
A second yellow, amazingly, John. I can't believe it.
I can only really see that ref didn't get the best view of it, but awful tackle, potential leg breaker. Chris Shields out for the remainder of the season.
Out for the remainder of the season. Very disappointing for Chris Shields. He had another great season for Dundalk. We've talked so much on the show this year about Shamrock Rovers' lack of discipline. It was an absolutely appalling tackle from Dave McAllister. Let's not try and sugarcoat this. It was a dreadful tackle. Very lucky not to break his leg, Chris Shields. Unbelievably, a second yellow. Maybe you're right, maybe the referee didn't get the best angle on it, but the pictures say it all, and it was just a dreadful tackle, and he's only going to miss Rovers' next league, not even their league game, because it'll carry over to the replay. So he's only going to miss one game, and Chris Shields is going to miss the season. It seems grossly unfair, but these things happen in football, and I'm sure Stephen Kenny's just going to have to try and get his team going again.
Ongoing problem for Rovers, this is a disciplinary issue. I mean, the amount of red cards this season, crazy. It's really affected them this season. So, that's something they're going to have to stamp out, Kieran.
Yeah, definitely. And
stamp, probably not the best word, but
perhaps. It was such a high temp, high passion and a hard, high charge game, John. And unfortunately, we're probably just going to have to speak quickly on, a lot of talk about crowd trouble at the game. Yeah. We obviously seen the incident with the pitch, the flare catching fire on the pitch, causing damage to the playing surface in Oriel, which isn't good to see. As we heard Raf Cataro in our interview with Play Letter for You, he was talking about how good it is to see Dundalk investing in the playing surface there with their European money, and it cost them a lot of money. So that's something that I'm sure that upset a lot of people at Dundalk. We obviously seen footage as well of some incidents in the town as well. So we won't say much more on that, but very disappointing to see. It's not what the League of Ireland needs in the headlines. This was a fantastic game of football. It was televised as well, so this is exactly this type of match we want to see. We don't want to see that type of thing being highlighted, so hopefully there won't be a repeat in the replay.
There's going to be more fines for clubs, isn't there, and you know, for allowing fans to bring flares into the ground in the first place.
Yeah, and we've spoken so much about flares on the show this season, because it's something you see every week in the League of Ireland, really. Yeah. For such a small league, it's incredible the amount of pyrotechnics you do see, and we've spoken about how it can be used as a positive thing.
Yeah.
I know clubs get fined, but in terms of the colour and the atmosphere it brings to games, it's fantastic. And we've said if there can be, you know, a safe way of doing it, it should be encouraged by the FAI instead of fining clubs for it. Yeah. Well, obviously that's a debate for another day, but this was certainly an incident that wasn't helpful in that regard.
Absolutely not. Kieran, the replay for that, but I'm going to move on because there was a league fixture as well at the weekend, where Derry beat Drogheda. And it was closer than most people would think, 2-1.
Yeah, apologies to Derry and Drogheda fans. We actually forgot to mention this fixture on last week's show. We got so caught up in the big cup games coming up. But it was an important game for both sides. Unfortunately, Drogheda, this result, this loss has confirmed their relegation. They will play in the First Division next season. And it was a crucial win for Derry after that 5-0 beating they took at Bray. And it's moved them back 4 points clear of Bray in that battle for that European place.
Kieran, if ever a goal summed up a team, it was this one. The first one, suicidal defending, led to that first Derry goal from Conor McDermott. And you know, the second goal, McGuinness for Drogheda, we thought it had been pretty good this season, Kieran. Yeah. I thought he was very much at fault for that. He was very hesitant and allowed Roman Curtis to get in for the second. Derry should have made it 3-0, to be honest. Barry McNamee, he should have scored, should have made it 3-0. Donegal won back, but look, it's been coming all season. Drogheda relegated, major surgery needed for next season.
Yeah, just on Stephen McGuinness, I don't think you can be too critical of him considering his team has a goal difference of minus 41. He's probably bound to make a mistake at some stage when he's facing that much action.
Yeah.
Andrade had an interview today with Pete Matten in the newspapers, and he said he'd be happy to stay at Drogheda next season, which is quite surprising. And speaking to a lot of Drogheda fans, they aren't happy about it. Pete Matten, in that interview, he seemed to speak more about the situation regarding the stadium and how he thinks for the club to thrive going forward that they need to move out of Hunky Dory Park. And I think that's obviously you can't argue with that, but it seems to be a bit of a deflection tactic, to be honest, John. It's been a horrendous season.
Kieran, it reminds me so much of that season with Tony Cousins playing on for Cobra Legal. At least, I mean, they've only won four times, 18 points from 29 games. You can't tell me that Pete Martin's going to be kept on for next season.
Looks that way. I'm sorry, yeah. So, as we've seen with Longford, you know, when they were relegated, the bad feeling continued for a long time after even Tony Cousins' departure. So, it does go to show, you know, when an atmosphere like that surrounds a club and it's such doom and gloom, it can be very, very hard to get out of. And when you're falling down into the First Division, that really doesn't help things because it's a desperate situation for clubs, especially clubs like Drogheda that wouldn't have vast resources. You know, so falling down into a very uncertain First Division, it can't be good for the future of those clubs. So I think what's needed at Drogheda is just a complete change. There is some good young players in that squad, and Pete Mann did speak about that, but I can't see how he's the man to carry them forward after so much bad blood this season.
No, I agree. But on the other hand, talk briefly about it there. It's very, very good for Derry. They've opened up a 4-point gap on Bray, 4 matches left. You'd think that would be them shooting now for at least for that top four finish.
Yeah, well, some big games coming up in the next few weeks for Derry, and we spoke to Rory Patterson a little bit earlier on there, and that interview will be on later in the show, so we won't say too much on that. And he spoke about the big fixtures coming up in the next few weeks. But moving along, John, we're going to take a look at this weekend's fixtures in the Premier Division.
Okay, Kieran, so we're going to have a look at the fixtures for the weekend. So we're going to start off with key game at the top and the bottom, Bray against Galway, Kieran.
Yeah, so looking at it from a Bray point of view, John, 4 points off Europe, in a good run of form at the moment, 8 points from their last 12 available and undefeated in 5 Premier Division games. Their last defeat came on the 28th of July in the Premier Division with a 3-2 loss at home to Finn Harps. Galway, 1 point from the drop zone, so that shows you the crucial importance to both sides here this game. They're unbeaten in their last 3 Premier Division games, a 3-1 win over Sligo, 2-1 win over Derry, and a 1-1 draw away to Bohemians, who are in good form themselves. And they've got 6 goals in their last 3 Premier Division games, while Bray have 8, so we could be in for a high scoring one here, John.
I think so, and it's a very difficult one to call, you know. You'd think Bray would win that, being higher up the table, but Galway are absolutely scrapping for their lives, and they've got some players in form, like Ronan Murray, so I don't know which way to put that one, Kieran.
Well, the head-to-head record this season would lean in the favour of Bray. They've had a 2-1 win and a 1-0 win home and away against Galway. But I just really can't stress how much of a high scoring game this could be. Bray, 8 goals in their last 3, as I said, they're the 3rd highest scorers in the Premier Division. Galway, for all the troubles they've had this season, they actually have scored more goals than Bohemians, who are having such a good season. So 36 goals for Galway this season, where Bohs have 32. So that's quite an interesting statistic. It probably shows that maybe Galway's troubles have come at the other end. With the home advantage, you'd imagine Bray will just have enough firepower to push Galway aside. But these games towards the end of the season where teams are scrapping for their lives, you just really never know what way they're going to go. So I wouldn't be surprised if Galway were to get a point out of this. But as I said, the head-to-head from this season would suggest that Bray are back in that type of form after a rough little patch there after all the stuff off the field. And I'd have to tip Bray to win this one.
Yeah, well, I think Galway are going to get something there, Kieran. So just to upset the apple cart, so you know, and upset the Galway fans as well, because I know about my tipping. So, but anyway, moving on. Already relegated Drogheda at home to Shamrock Rovers, who can pretty much cement their position of third place.
Yeah, well, you'd imagine they will. You'd imagine they'd rest players for that game on Tuesday. In the recent game between Drogheda and Dundalk in Oriel Park in the league, we've seen Stephen Kenny rest players, and that was at a stage where Drogheda weren't confirmed as relegated. And so you'd imagine now that Drogheda are gone down, that this game probably nothing other than pride to play for. So you'd imagine Rovers will take their eye off the ball a little bit. Usually that would go in the favour of the opposition, but when you consider Drogheda haven't won in 19 Premier Division games, their last win was a 2-0 victory over Harps on the 21st of April. It really doesn't make good reading for Pete Matton's side. This is their 8th relegation in 28 seasons as well, so Drogheda's starting to get the reputation of a yo-yo club. On Rovers, spirit will obviously be high after that late equaliser in Oriel Park. McAllister will be free to play in this one, as we said. He'll miss the cup replay after only getting a second yellow, which for me is crazy. Regardless of that, though, 5 points clear of Bray, 4th guarantees Europe this season. Coming in off a loss, 2-0 the Pats, but 4 wins in their last 5 Premier Division games. As I said, should rest players for this one, and it should be a comfortable win, John.
Yeah, there could be 8 points clear of Bray by the end of the weekend, which would pretty much guarantee European football next season. So, yeah, I expect an away win as well. Now, this is an absolute crunch match. Pats against Limerick, Kieran. Two teams they're both outside the relegation zone, but if results go against them, certainly Pats could get dragged in again, and Limerick, they're still only 4 points from safety.
Yeah, this is one of the ties of the weekend for me, John.
Yep.
Both sides coming in with huge wins over their local rivals in recent weeks. Pats had that 2-0 win over Rovers, while Limerick, one of the surprises of the season when they overturned Cork City. That win over Rovers for Pats, John, incidentally, was their first win in 5 in all competitions. The big thing for me in this fixture is how similar the team's records are in the table. Limerick just have one more win than Pat, so it's 9 wins to 8. In terms of the head-to-head meetings this season, a 2-2 draw in the first meeting, and then Limerick won the second meeting 2-0, so Limerick have the upper hand in the head-to-head. But Limerick's spirit display against Cork in the cup quarter-final, I think that was the first time this season we've seen Ogbeni marked out of the game. You can certainly see Cork putting 2 or 3 players on him at times during the game, so that's something same Pats may look to recreate and keep the Limerick's main man out of action. 7 points from the last 12. It's been a real turnaround for a team we were branding Free Fall FC a couple of weeks ago. I think you'd have to give Limerick the upper hand away from home here.
Yeah, I think so, just on recent form. However, Kieran, I'm really struggling to put much between the two teams, and I'm going for a draw with that one.
Yeah, hard to argue otherwise, John. Moving on to Finn Harps against Dundalk. It's live on RT2, 5 p.m. on Saturday.
It's starting to get to do or die time for Harps, Kieran, isn't it?
Yeah, 2 points from safety, comprehensively beaten 4-1 by Rovers last time out. Only Drogheda have less home wins this season. 4 home wins for Harps, Drogheda have 2. So home advantage mightn't count for a lot here against the still champions Dundalk. Cork City obviously going to wrap that title up soon, though. Also, goal difference could be a huge thing in terms of the relegation this season.
And Harps is terrible, isn't it?
Yeah, just looking at it, Sligo have minus 15, Galway have minus 4, Pats have minus 9, but Finn Harps have minus 24, so that could really play into things.
Yeah, unfortunately so. Look, I'm really struggling to see them getting anything against Dundalk. Like I said before, Kieran, I think they're going down. They're in deep trouble. I can't see them getting anything at home to Dundalk.
hard to argue, and similar to the Shamrock Rovers game, I'd imagine we'll see Dundalk rest a number of players ahead of that replay on Tuesday. They must win this game though, still Dundalk, just to keep Cork waiting that little bit longer, so Stephen Kenny won't take his eye off the ball too much. But would have been a long trip as well, you would imagine some tired bodies will be rested for this one.
Yeah,
they're going to be without Chris Shields, as we said, out for the season, but Dundalk still undefeated in 13 in all competitions, 6-0 on aggregate in terms of the head to head this season against Harps, so you can't look any other way than a Dundalk win here.
No, and then finally Sligo, who are still desperately needing points and still in big trouble, they're at home to Bohemians at the weekend.
Yeah, so huge game for both sides, different reasons perhaps. I know we had Paddy Kavanagh on the show last week, the Bohemians winger, and he said that Bohs are still looking to secure their safety. I think that might have been just a little bit of mind games, really.
No, they're 9 points clear of Sligo, and look, four matches to go, they're safe, Kieran.
9 points clear, clear of the drop zone, 6 points off Europe, so yeah. Europe's definitely the goal for Bohs now. It's not looking over their shoulder time. As for Sligo there, they're only 1 point from safety. As I've mentioned, the goal difference could be a big thing this season. Sligo minus 15, whereas Pats are minus 9, Galway minus 4, Limerick minus 10. So similar to Harps, that could be a big issue for Sligo. Both sides with 2-0 wins over each other in this fixture this season. The most Bohemians win, we saw Corcoran and Ward getting on the score sheet. And I think just the firepower of Bohs with Ward, Corcoran, Akinade, I think that could be maybe the thing that splits these two sides.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with that, Kieran. I think it's optimistic for Bohs European qualification. There's 6 points off, there's four games left. You know, and you're looking at the likes of Derry and Bray dropping point. I don't think that's going to happen. I think Bohs are going to finish a nice, comfortable mid-table. They're not going to be worrying Europe. They're not going to be worrying the bottom three. It's at that stage of the season now. It's do or they have to start winning some games, Kieran.
Draws have killed Sligo this season.
They've only won six times.
Yeah, but just looking at the draws, 13 draws this season. That's the highest in the league, yeah. And they've got a lot of those draws in recent weeks because they've collected 11 points out of a possible 24. Whereas in that time same time frame, Bohemians have collected 14. So it just shows the importance of getting a win. You're nearly better to win a game and lose one than draw two games, if you kind of get me in that sense. And Bohs have had some big wins in that time, wins over Pats, wins over Rovers, a win over Cork. In the interview now we're about to play in a moment with Raf Cataro, he speaks about the importance of home advantage, John. But looking at the stats, Sligo only have 4 wins from 14, whereas Bohs have 8. So it wouldn't really suggest that home advantage has been a big factor. It's in fact the second lowest home win rate in the league. Drogheda have less with only 2 home wins. Harps have 4 home wins. So Sligo also have the same. So yeah. Maybe Raf is trying to get the crowd behind them for this. What a huge game. But you know, the stats really do point towards Bohs for this one, John.
Yeah, like I say, I can't disagree with it. But Sligo are absolutely scrapping for their life. They have to get something out of this. They're a bit draw specialists. They might get a point, Kieran.
You could indeed be right, John, but we're going to look for the inside track now by speaking to Sligo Rovers legend, Raf Cataro. So I'm delighted also to say we're joined this week by another League of Ireland legend. It's Raf Cataro, a man who's made over 500 appearances for Sligo Rovers and coincidentally his 500 cap came against Longford Town in the FAI Cup recently. Raf, you're very welcome to Between the Stripes LOI podcast.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
So, Raf, I guess on we're going to talk about current situations at the moment. Sligo Rovers, you find yourself 1 point cut away from the safety zone. You have Bohemians on Saturday, a former club. Maybe a little bit of extra motivation for yourself going into that one. Obviously, it's already a huge game, though.
Yeah, I think every game now, the last four games, as the cliche would say, they're all cup finals now for us. But I think we're very confident going into the weekend because our home record this season and probably over the last few seasons has been very good. So I think the fact that we're at home, you know, we'll be definitely looking to get all 3 points.
Obviously, I've described you there in the intro as a League of Ireland legend. You know, it's very rare that a player makes so many appearances for one club. Obviously, you had spells away at Bohs and Galway, but just I'd love to go back to maybe your time with Bohs. It was a big move for you at the time. Obviously, Bohs had only won the league the season before. Why you scored 7 goals during that 2010 season for Bohs and won the Satantic the Cup as well, of course. Were you perhaps a little bit disappointed to leave it at the end? Obviously, it was probably outside of your control with the well-documented issues of Bohemians at the time. But do you ever think back and maybe think about what might have been if that Bohemians team had been able to stay together?
it was one of them ones. They had a long tenure there at the top of Irish football. I think they had a period of 4 years, 5 years, like we had ourselves at Sligo. Mm. And it was at the stage where it was coming to an end, and the fact that I had moved up myself, obviously I'd moved up with two Derry lads, Rory Higgins and Garrett McGlynn from Derry. You know, made the move probably a lot easier for me. I found the move probably quite tough, if I'm being honest. It was my first time probably really away from home, and I really found it quite tough. And I remember saying, I had spoken to Paul Cook actually, and would have spoken to him regular throughout that season, and he had tried to bring me back in July of that season, and it didn't materialise anyways for one reason or another. It didn't, but he brought me back anyways the following season, and I was delighted to come back in 2011 and go on and, you know, probably every domestic trophy that can be won. Yeah, so that was great to do that with my hometown club.
Yeah, and the season before that, Raf, you scored an incredible 21 goals with Sligo in the 2009 season. You haven't really replicated those numbers, I suppose, in years gone by, but I think it's fair to say you do play in a lot of different positions. I think you'd definitely be classed as a team player. Do you feel maybe that's had an impact on not being able to recreate those kind of goal scoring numbers?
I'd probably see myself as a striker. Definitely see myself as a striker, and I think probably any time I've played up front, I think obviously the stats would say that I probably had my most successful seasons when been played up front. Mm. So, but no, like you said, you know, it's one of them cases. Kind of, I can play in a number of positions, and look, if asked to do so, I'll do that gladly, you know, and try and help the team in whatever way I can. But like you said, probably if I was to have a choice, I'd love to play up top. That'd be my decision. But like I said, look, it's one of them ones. If the team needs me in a different position and I'm asked to do that, gladly do that without a doubt.
So, Raf, a league title in 2012, cup wins in 2011 and 2013. But would keeping Sligo Rovers in the Premier Division this season, would that be equally as important for the club's future, I suppose?
Absolutely. You know, you hear, and like I said, I've said it before, probably me being a bit biased in terms of Sligo is probably one of the biggest clubs in the country, if not the biggest club in the country, in my eyes anyways. You know, in terms of you just walk in the front gates and you see what's been done around the place and the way the obviously the full time setup obviously as well is the main thing with the AstroTurf pitch there beside it and the pitch at the back. So, you know, we train in actually in the grounds and we have everything there on campus. Kind of, you know, we come eat our breakfast in the morning and everything. So everything's there. So for me, I don't think it's a choice for Sligo Rovers to be in the First Division, and that's not been disrespectful to anyone that's in the First Division. I just think it's you know, and I can't see it. Look, like I said, I'd be very optimistic and very confident that we'll get ourselves out of bother in the last four games, definitely.
Yeah, it's interesting actually that you should mention the facilities at Sligo, because that was going to be my next question to you. We hear a lot about the importance of clubs investing while they're having a successful spell, and we've certainly seen that with Sligo's the redevelopment of the showgrounds, the training facilities, the AstroTurf you mentioned, obviously a full time setup there as well. Do you feel it's crucially important for the league that League of Ireland clubs are looking to invest in the off field as much as the on field while they're having those successful spells?
100%. You know, you see obviously Dundalk had after having the big European adventure that they had, straight away invested in the pitch. Mm. You know, which was fantastic. But like I go back again to Sligo and over the glory years that we had, the 4 or 5 years of success that we had, I think that the fact that the club didn't just put everything on kind of wages or other stuff, you know, they really invested in the infrastructure of the club. The Volkswagen stand at the bottom end, and so on and so on. I can, you know, the Termac, the whole thing. So it's, you know, like, it's fantastic to see. It's kind of like when you go to Cork as well. Cork probably won't be one of my own personal favourites. When you walk in the gates and you walk out the tunnel onto the pitch, you get that feeling of, oh, you know, I want to play. You know, it's a great atmosphere. There's all a big crowd down there. And I think players get that similar feeling. This is feedback from other players. They get that feeling when they step out to the showgrounds or come into the showgrounds as well, you know.
Yeah, on the flip side of that, Raf, though, I suppose the critics would say this. I strongly disagree with this statement, but this is what the critics would say, that maybe Sligo have looked too much to the off-field and not enough on the on-field in recent years. That's maybe perhaps why Sligo has gone from being a team challenging for titles and European places to a team that's maybe had to scrap toward the bottom in recent years. What would you make of that criticism?
Look, it's one for me. I'm a money player. I wouldn't know kind of really what goes on in that regard. Mm. I think it's just fantastic that the club just, you know, it looks so well coming into it. You know, I think obviously financially things are quite tight, as are the Ireland club in the League of Ireland at the minute. I think obviously the big thing about Sligo and the Sligo supporters is whenever there is any financial difficulty, and over the last, I think, 2 weeks, to my knowledge, there's been something like 35,000 generated between fundraisers and people coming in just throwing a few pounds into the club and stuff like that. And for me, there's many clubs in this country that'll get that kind of support from fans and from just the general public in general. So I think that's the big thing, that anytime the club is in any financial difficulty, fans have been fantastic and have helped out. And, you know, obviously it's great that the club has that there, that the fans are willing to dig deep into their pockets and help out.
Are you sure you haven't seen my notes on Snapchat or something, Rafa? My next question was going to be about the real connection, the local connection between the fans and the players. Sligo seems to be a really unique club in that sense. It's a real football town. I know we hear that term a lot about some League of Ireland clubs, but it's certainly true about Sligo Rovers, and it must just make it such a special place to play.
Absolutely, yeah. I think, again, I'll go back to lads, that the number of players that have probably come through, that I have seen come through anyways, for the length I've been here, I could count on my hand maybe three, four, five lads that have actually came from England and have actually settled in Sligo have a family and call it pretty much home now. And that all started with coming to Sligo as a player, playing here and falling in love with everything about the place, the club, the town, the fans, everything about it. And I think it has got that real kind of family feel to it. I'll use Richard Brush as a prime example, who came from Birmingham and would have no ties whatsoever to Sligo, but who now lives in Ballysadare with his wife and his kid and works in Sligo now, you know, and plays obviously with Ballinamallard as well. So that'll tell you the draw it has with the players and the connection that you get, that whole community and family feeling around the place.
And finally, Raf, remaining fixtures: Bohemians at home, Shamrock Rovers away, Derry at home, Drogheda away. Four crucial fixtures for the future of Sligo Rovers. How many points do you feel is necessary to keep Rovers in the Premier this season?
That's a good question. It's a very good question. It's a question we're actually asking ourselves, obviously, as a group. Personally, I would love to win every one of them to make sure that, you know, we would possibly be definitely safe then. But I think two wins, I think, out of your last four games will give you a great chance of definitely staying up.
Yeah, again, I think you've seen my notes, Raf, because it's the two home games I have underlined here as the big ones for Sligo, against Bowes and Derry. So I suppose you're really looking to get a big crowd out to the showgrounds for those ones, and and capitalise on the home advantage?
100%, 100%. You know, like I said, the first question you asked me, I think, was regards that, and I think that our home form has been so crucial to us this season. You know, obviously we got two away wins there back to back against Cork City and Finn Harps, which was fantastic, and they couldn't have been probably at a better time for us. We were on a little bit of a run, obviously until we went to Galway. But I don't see why we can't go on another little run, a little mini run, as they'd say, between now and the end of the season. And like I said, again, two wins, I think, and that'll give you a fantastic chance of survival, I think, definitely.
Well, Raf, you're one of the most decorated players we've ever had on the podcast, so we want to thank you very much for taking time out to speak to us, and the very best of luck for the rest of the season with Sligo.
Appreciate it. Thanks very much for having me.
Cheers, Raf.
Enjoyed the show so far? Why not drop us a review on iTunes? Is there something you'd like featured on next week's show? Tweet us on @BetweenStripes or find us on Facebook by searching Between the Stripes. Finally, our website address is www.betweenthestripesblog.wordpress.com. Enjoy the second half.
So we're delighted to be joined on this week's show by Derry City striker Rory Patterson, a man who certainly knows his way to the back of the net. Rory, you're very welcome to the podcast and thanks for joining us.
Thanks
for having me. So Rory, obviously we're going to speak about Derry City's current run. Derry looking good to qualify for Europe again this season. Obviously some big games coming up in the next few weeks to make sure that's secure. But just want to go back and talk about the start of your career. You started out at Rochdale, Young Player of the Year 03, 04, but then you were released. Did you feel hard done by at that stage in your career? Obviously, just starting out, it must have been very difficult at that young age.
Not really. Right now, the type of club where I think I played under 8 managers, so I was always trying to get under a new manager's hands. And weirdly enough, it was the manager that gave me my debut. He's the one who ended up releasing me, but
Yeah, but I don't think anyone could have seen the success story that was coming when you went to FC United in 2005. Of course, the club was only starting out then. When you joined that club, did you expect it to take off like it did? It's such a big name now. Obviously, they haven't really maybe reached the heights yet that people expect, but whenever you see FC United videos online, there's a great following, people are always talking about it. Did you expect it to be such a big thing when you joined the club?
No, exactly. It didn't. It was the manager. He's been the manager from the start. He got in contact with me when I left Rochdale. Not that far about football, but he begged me to come and play a pre-season match, and I was like, nah, look, not for me, just not going to be bored. He came to my house, and he picked me up for a pre-season match, and we got there late, so it was like pre-season, so we had no passport or stuff like that, no numbers on them, and I ended up getting a blood shirt, only one left, and nobody knew who I was. It was like £3,500, and it was a pre-season match, obviously nobody knew who each other was. We were just starting out, and he was just getting the team together, but nah, but remember my days, everywhere we went, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people there.
Could you have ever foreseen 107 goals in 126 appearances, Rory? Absolutely incredible. But I'd love to just ask you, obviously that was the early days of FC United, so how would you, the standard of football, how would you have described it compared to maybe, say, the first division in the League of Ireland? I know people love to always have this debate on the lower leagues in England and how they compare to the league here.
Obviously it wasn't, there were some good teams in it, there were some bad teams in it, but at that time it was like, it was a lot of people getting released from the Man City, United, and that league was regionally, some they like all people from that were like, so there were some very good players. Anthony Pilkington played in that league.
Never knew that, you learn something every day.
He started, I can't remember the team that was, but he got a move to Stockport from that league. He scored a hat-trick against us, actually. So they were good players in the league, like, obviously, different five of the teams, like, but no, it's still good, like, still good to play him.
And obviously, speaking of Anthony Pilkington, an ex-Republic of Ireland international, you had international recognition of your own with Northern Ireland, and you know, football, so little footballers make it through to the top level, and even less make it through to the international level and score a goal for their country. I take it that must still be the highlight of your career.
Nah, it was a nice feeling to score. It's only a penalty, like, but seeing the chance to take it, and there was a few looking to take it, but I got the ball, I got it, so nah, it was obviously a good highlight. It was at home as well, it was a good atmosphere, the match.
Yeah, and obviously you had a spell in the north as well with Coleraine and Lingfield. another incredible record with Coleraine, 30 goals in 33 appearances. How do you do it, Rory? You arrived at Derry City finally with Declan Devine in charge. When you joined Derry, did you know a lot about the League of Ireland at the time? Just on, I suppose, leagues that maybe people here would be unfamiliar with, you went to Australia and again, 20 goals in 19 appearances for Cockburn City. What was that like as an experience? Under Kenny Shields, of course, Rory. I suppose he's often described as one of the most charismatic managers in the league. How have you found it to work with Kenny? Final two questions, Rory. Obviously, currently in a European position for this year, I suppose that would qualify a success for Derry City, qualifying once again for Europe. And have you decided on your future for next year at all yet, or are you just currently concentrating on getting over the line and securing that European spot?
Oh, that was just four games to go, so next year it's take a couple of weeks off, maybe, and then I think about football for a couple of weeks. It's been a rough out season, so I haven't thought too much about it. I'm just trying to get I know we're in Europe at a fourth spot now because of the FA Cup situation, but we're trying to catch Shamrock Rovers, and we don't want to give up that third spot. We did them last year, and if we pull the back now, we got a lot of luck there with them dropped points, so kind of open the door for us again for them to step up. We have to be there with them and take the back.
Well, Rory, I think it's fair to say you're probably the most goal-laden player we've had on the show so far this season. So we want to thank you very much for joining us and the very best of luck for the rest of the season with Derry.
No worries. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Rory.
Okay, Kieran, so moving on to the First Division. There's only one thing really left, and that's the bottom spot to be battled for, and Athlone are at home to UCD.
Well, four places still up for grabs, John, but no Europe in First Division, unfortunately, with four spots. Yeah, we'll start by talking about Athlone and UCD, and the big news from the First Division, just after we actually uploaded last week's show, so thanks for the FAI for not doing that in time for last week's show, but we'll speak about it now, was Wexford have had their point taken away for that draw recently with Shelburne. They actually played an ineligible player. They played a goalkeeper who was registered with the under-17s. I thought you could just move players up and down freely, John, but obviously that wasn't the case. They've been deducted their point for that. So Athlone can still actually finish off the bottom, amazingly, but they're going to have to beat a UCD team who have excelled this season in the First Division.
That's not going to happen, Kieran, anyway. So, no, I have no hope for Athlone this season. Their season was over a long time ago. It'll be just getting ready for next season.
Yeah, three wins over Athlone this season. 4-0, 2-0 and 4-1. So Athlone have only registered once this season against them. They may not register in this final home game, and you'd imagine there'd be a very small crowd issues still going on off the pitch at Athlone. We won't speak about that again this week, but it's not looking good for Athlone, and who knows, we may not see them in the First Division at all next season.
Well, I hope it gets sorted out, because I think Athlone, we do need Athlone in that division. So
yeah, but I don't think in their current state they're really adding a lot to the League of Ireland.
No.
We've seen nothing but negative headlines coming out of the club this year, so I think that's something that really needs to be sorted out in the off season, and hopefully the fans can get a hold of that club, because they're the people that are suffering the most throughout all of this.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we'll move on anyway. That team that they were ducked at the point, Wexford, they go to Longford. Longford's still an outside chance of fourth place, haven't they?
Yep.
You'd think end of season, last match. Look, there'll be players still trying to impress at Longford, won't they?
Yeah, I think a lot of players will be playing for a contract for next season. Obviously, the manager himself hasn't confirmed yet whether he's signed that deal, but the whispers around the club are that Neil Fenn will be in charge again next season, which is a great boost because he's certainly brought a new lease of life to Longford Town Football Club. Just end of season form, Longford without a win in three in all competitions at the moment. They haven't won since that 2-0 away win against Cabin Teely. Daniel O'Reilly has been named in the PFAI team of the year, totally deserved, so well done to Daniel, who we've had on the show a couple of times this year. Undefeated versus Wexford in 2017, so that's a real positive ahead of this one. And they, as you said, they need the win to have any chance of finishing fourth. Wexford need the win to secure not finishing bottom, so both teams have a little bit to play for here, which is always good going into the last game. But you would imagine Longford, they gave Wexford a very heavy beating at CCS early in the season, 5-0, which amazingly turned out to be Alan Matthews' last game. So yeah, you wouldn't be surprised if you actually seen a similar scoreline. Wexford have been very weak this season.
Just looking at the last few games for Longford, I'm not sure Fenn knows what his strongest side is. I think that's the problem. You've seen him experimenting. Hey, Dervin's come in. I'm not so sure at the moment he knows what the strongest side is. I think he'll continue to to give people chance because people will be playing for contracts next season. Mm. So I'm unsure what kind of lineup Longford will have, but I still think they'll have enough for Wexford.
Well, I think the thing is, John, that the season's been effectively over for a long time now. So while Longford did have a couple of big games in recent weeks, they had obviously the cup games and some of the league games were still important because they were early on in Fenn's reign and he wanted to put a marker down. But he's had the freedom at the same time to be able to kind of pick and choose and swap players around, knowing that the season was over and that nobody's going to look at Longford's league position at the end of the year, because first is all that matters in this league. Longford, yep, this season, it didn't happen for them. So after that, it doesn't really affect anything. So I think he's had the freedom to kind of put players in there, and we've seen it work to great effect at times this season. Peter Hopkins came in, totally unknown, was man of the match against Sligo Rovers in that cup game. Looks to be a real player that could add something really special to Longford next season with his extraordinary pace down the wing. We've seen Ed Irvine come in, as you said. He's gaining rave reviews all over the place. Longford mightn't even hold on to him the way things are.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of decisions for Neil Fenn to make over the off-season. I'm sure he'll want to bring in his own players. We've seen a couple of names linked already in recent weeks. So look, I don't think the team that finishes this game is going to be the team that starts next season, anything like that. There's going to be a lot of activity at Longford over the off season, and it's going to be an exciting period for Longford fans, hopefully.
Indeed, indeed. Well, let's hope we finish the season off with a bang, 3 points, and
points,
an enjoyable night at the awards night.
Yeah,
Kieran.
Yeah, most definitely. And who are you going to vote for if you had a vote for Player of the Year, John?
I think it has to be Danny O'Reilly. Yeah. He's been in Team of the Year. He's impressed me all season. He's been solid at the back, consistent, Kieran.
Yeah. In a team at the start of the year, they're struggling so much as well. He still managed to stand out.
And you don't see make many mistakes, Kieran.
No.
You sometimes see a lot of defenders in this league. They make howlers, but O'Reilly seems very solid. So
yeah, hopefully they can get him tied down to a contract. That's the type of player you want to be building your team around for next year.
Yeah. Look, two more fixtures, Kieran, before we finish up with First Division. Shelburne against Cabin Teely. Cabin Teely will want to finish the season with 0.3 points to make sure they get fourth place.
Yeah, so we've mentioned that boring battle for fourth, but Shelburne are involved in that. They can finish fourth, which would be quite a decent season for Shelburne. They don't have a big resource compared to the likes of Longford and Waterford. So, and even we've seen some big names come into Cabin Teely this season, so you'd wonder in budget wise if those two clubs are quite similar. So to be involved in the top half battle is quite a good season for Shelves, and they'll hope to build on that for next year. And we've seen the news this week that they're going to be Daly Mount Park has been put back for two seasons, so Bohemians will be playing for another two seasons at Daly Mount. Shelburne will still be the outright owners or main team at Talca Park. They have one win and two losses this season against Cabin Teely, so they'll be looking to even up the head-to-head. And they're looking for win number 10 this season. So as I said, quite a good season for Shelburne.
Yeah, I think I do think Cabin Teely will have a bit too much for them. I think they'll probably win this one, Kieran. Look, Kieran Marty Ward is having a spectacular season.
Yeah.
Can't stop scoring at the moment. So they seem to have plenty of goals. I mean, a bit of a leaky at the back, but yeah. I think Cabo will finish fourth this season.
Yeah, I think the firepower just Cabo have will be the difference maker. You have Waters, Ryan Swan and Joe Doyle. It's a great pairing up front, really. Yeah. It's something that a lot of teams in the First Division would be happy to have. So, and as you said there with Marty Waters, he's currently in possession of that golden boot, and he'll be looking to get a few more just to stretch that lead over Georgie Kelly of UCD. And I'd have to agree with you and go for a Cabin Teely win as they look for their third win in a row.
Final fixture. We were hoping this might be a title decider, Kieran, but it didn't turn out that way. Cove against the champions, Waterford.
Yeah, and it's probably been that head-to-head form against Waterford that's been costly in the end for Cove. 1 point from nine against Waterford in 2017. As we've mentioned a lot on the show this season, poor crowds at St. Coleman's Park, and with nothing on the line here, you'd imagine it could be a very low turnout, disappointingly for Stephen Hendrick's side, who've been brilliant this season. No word on whether Paul Hunt will be fit for action on this one yet. He took a very nasty blow to the head in a recent league game, so best wishes to former Longford man Paul, who was on the show so kindly a couple of weeks ago. Just on Waterford, a comfortable 4-1 win in their last meeting. I think when that result happened, a lot of people thought the title race was dead and buried, but to Cove's credit, they kept fighting on for another couple of weeks, but it was that defeat, of course, to Cabo that undone them. Waterford unbeaten in four in all competitions, and they're in party mode, as we all know, and big investment coming over the coming off-season.
Yeah, you can see that's the team that will start next season for Waterford being quite different to the one that's finishing this season.
Yeah, you'd wonder how that's going to affect players. Obviously, they're going to still be in party mode, as we said, but a lot of these players might be thinking to themselves, you know, I've been part of this success this season, but am I going to play any role at all next season? Waterford are going full time. We had FM Ireland Mark Hill on the show last week. He's the communications officer at Waterford, and he talked about how they're going up, not just to stay up and make up the numbers, but they realistically see themselves challenging for Europe next season.
Yeah.
So, you know, we see in the current Premier Division, the tiers, you know, you have your Dundalk and your Cork, or this season Cork Dundalk, I should say. Then you have your Shamrock Rovers, your Derrys, your Bray, and then it's a little kind of Bohemians, Limerick, and then a mini league below that. So for Waterford to go straight up and be up in one of them top tiers, it's going to take a lot of investment. But we all know Waterford and Lee Power has that financial muscle to certainly worry a few teams in the transfer market, and it'll be interesting to see what happens in the off-season of Waterford. But that rounds up our League of Ireland coverage, John. Just before we end the show, we're going to speak to Ger Kevill from YBIG ahead of two massive games for Ireland this week. So we're delighted to say we're joined on the line this week by a member of YBIG. It's Ger Kevill, and Ger, two huge games coming up for Ireland this week. I suppose everyone's looking to the game Monday and calling that the decider, but that won't be the case if Ireland would slip up on Friday. And considering recent form, that maybe is a bigger possibility than people think. Would you agree?
No, I would agree, yeah. It's by no means a gimme, I don't think, at this stage. I do expect us to win. I wouldn't say too comfortably, but I do expect us to get a win. And in one sense, O'Neill and the team, they kind of have to have one eye on Monday because, you know, team selection on Monday will dictate who he chooses to play on Friday. So, you know, we all know that Wes Hoolan, can he play two games in such a quick turnaround? If he doesn't start on Friday, that means he's in on Monday.
Is it at the stage, though, Ger, where Wes Hoolan simply has to play these two games?
But he hasn't done so in how many years now? I think he said it himself not too long ago that his body just can't take it, you know? So, I don't think we need him against Moldova. You know, you could argue that we could get past Moldova with other players and save them then for the bigger game on Monday. Look, there's all sorts of permutations that are going to happen between then and now as well. To keep our eye on other groups as well.
Yeah, so, but myself and John here were just talking about that. It's probably the England and the Scotland games that are the most likely permutations that could take place.
There's that group, and then there's the Bosnia group as well.
Yeah, but correct.
I mean, you look at the results that we have to wait on. It's not very light, you have to say. You know, we are really counting on others to do us big favours here.
Well, John, if England don't do us a favour, you're gone. You're not getting a co-host job here next season.
I'm going to be dumped off the podcast if we don't do that.
But in terms of team selection, we're speaking about Wes Hoolan, but obviously the big other one will be who starts up front. Shane Long sat out training yesterday, but he will be perfectly fine to start that game against Moldova if Martin O'Neill deems him to be the man to lead the line. But if not, I suppose the decision will be between Scott Hogan and Sean Maguire. What would your views be on that?
Yeah, look, there's been a lot of talk of this now, I have to say, over the last few days. Long hasn't scored, 23 games for both club and country.
Can't seem to buy a goal at the moment.
You know, yeah, and obviously O'Neill has beefed up his attack with Maguire, Hogan, and also Aidan O'Brien from Millwall. I do think he's ready. The likes of Maguire is obviously ready to come in. I think he can do a job, but I just think it's too early for him. I think he should play a role in one of the games, possibly Moldova at some stage, if her, you know, the final 20 to give him a taste of international football. But I do think, in my own opinion, I think Long has to start two games, certainly for the first. You know, if he's not doing it, then we have some options on the bench. We have Maguire, Hogan, Darrell Murphy obviously is there as well. I'd actually start Murphy and Long together against Moldova. But I definitely stick with Long on a personal level. And then you have Maguire to come in, sniff out a goal for you, if need be. Same with Hogan. But certainly I think Long, he's robust. He can go and he'll chase balls down. If he's not scoring after, you know, 50, 60 minutes, he's going to give defenders a hard time. I mean, you heard what the Serbian said about him and Walters. That's just a nightmare. He's an absolute nightmare to play against. So he can sort of do a bit of damage there, even if he isn't scoring, if you know what I mean, if that makes any kind of sense. And hopefully then we have lads on the bench that can come in and finish it off.
Yeah, Joe, I know there's keen interest in Maguire, but I think O'Neill's too conservative a manager. The matches are too important for him to take any gambles as such. I think he'll just stick with the tried and trusted.
Yeah, I mean, I think the time for Maguire was back in a friendly. I think it was Uruguay in the summer. Like, you know, he should have been given international football back then.
Yeah.
When, you know, you could argue he was a League of Ireland. O'Neill argued he was a League of Ireland football. But as you say, that's where his conservatism is probably his downfall in certain areas. You know, the man, Maguire, was ready to step up and play some role back then, surely. You know, he should have been given some sort of chance. And now is just not the time to be starting Maguire, I don't think. But certainly some role I think he may have to offer. I do think that O'Neill will prefer Scott Hogan. So I think he'll go Long. I think he will start Long. I think Murphy and Hogan will be ahead of Maguire in the pecking order. I think that's the way O'Neill will go with these two games.
I think it's fair to say though, Hogan hasn't really pulled up any trees since his move to Aston Villa. Where Sean Maguire, he's been playing out of position with Preston out on the wing, and he's been scoring a couple of goals here and there, and he's been getting a lot of Man of the Match awards as well. So do you feel maybe that money, the price tag on Hogan is maybe glamorising him too much?
Absolutely. And like John just had, the perfect point there from John was that O'Neill's a conservative manager, and that he will, I genuinely think that he will see Maguire as a bigger risk than Hogan, and that's why he'll go for Hogan. I think little elements like that will play in his mind, and he'll say, well look, this for me, Hogan is a safer option. I'm not saying it's right. I would probably put Maguire ahead of Hogan in the pecking order myself, as you say, based on form. He scored three goals for Preston. He's also, I think he's picked up, I don't know,
at least two, if not three.
So I mean, he's doing the business. I was talking to a journalist over in Preston just through Twitter, and he said this guy is excellent, you know. Mm.
And just while we're on the subject of ex-League of Ireland men in the national team, obviously Kevin Doyle announced his retirement this week. I think it's fair to say Kevin's best days were behind him with Ireland, and he was very much a squad player, and it was great commitment for him to be coming over from the MLS still and taking up what he probably knew himself was always going to be a place on the bench, but a great servant to Irish football.
An absolutely brilliant servant, and I don't think you'll find one Ireland fan that won't speak highly of Kevin Doyle. He's been he saved Trapattoni's job in Kazakhstan with that last minute goal. He's been absolutely, he's given the green shirt absolutely everything. He's given us some great moments. Bratislava, Slovakia away in Bratislava in 2007 is always one that sticks out in my mind, with that left foot strike into the top corner. But look, he's been fantastic. I think there was moments where I don't think Trapattoni treated him too well towards Trapp's ladder a few months. There was also a bizarre moment, I think it was last year, when he travelled all the way up to the States only to be told there was no room on a plane. I think it was probably when we were going to play Spain in America. Could have been that, you know. So, but look, he's been exceptional. And as you say, his best days were behind him. He's a squad player at best now, but definitely wish him all the best.
Yeah, and I'm sure he'll be a keen observer for the game in Cardiff on Monday. Are you travelling over yourself, Ger?
I certainly am now. I'll be going over Monday morning, 8:30, and then red-eye flight into Cardiff. I have to say, we're clinging on to as much optimism as possible, I think, at this stage, Ireland fans, you know.
Yeah, I might...
Here before, final two games, and, you know, we think back 30 years ago when we qualified for Euro 88 and what Bulgaria, what happened then, so... Honestly, I can't see it, but we will. There's a small bit of optimism anyway. So.
Yeah, I might see you in the airport for an old pre-match pint, but just obviously the big news ahead of that one is Gareth Bale is out for Wales, so obviously goes without saying, a huge boost for Ireland.
It is a huge boost, but as I said, there's a lot of things that lot of moving parts before we even kick a ball against Wales. And that, I mean, there's football. I think there's results every day until Monday. We have to look out for nearly, you know. From there's possibly two groups, as we've talked about, that we can possibly catch. There's a third group, which is, you know, not really. It can happen, but it probably won't happen. So, I mean, they're all in action, so there's all that to happen. And, of course, we have to beat Moldova Friday night. Like, the way we've been playing, we're winless now in 2017, so, you know, we're going to have to really put in a bit of a performance here on Friday night, first of all, and then we can worry about Monday and what the results and the Gareth Bale factor. But certainly, look, it is a bit of a boost, all right.
Gerard, it's a massive boost. Wales just aren't the same team without Bale. You know, they don't win matches without him. He's just a talisman. It's a huge boost. You can't underestimate that.
I think if we beat Moldova on Friday and if results go our way, if we go into the Welsh game knowing that a win will get us the playoff, that's when we really start celebrating the Bale factor. But there's just too much. There's too much to happen before that becomes a factor.
Yeah,
we have to hope Bosnia, you know, don't beat. Are beaten by Belgium and Cyprus, take points off Bosnia, etc., etc., etc. But then certainly then. Then we start thinking about Bale and everything else that goes with on Monday.
Yeah, totally agreed.
And the lack of Bale.
Yeah, finally a good bailout for Ireland, but I think we've heard that one enough times this week. So we're going to leave it there, Gerard. Thanks very much for joining us, and safe travel. We might see you over there.
No problem. Thanks, lads.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Gerard. Well, Kieran, it was great to speak to Ger. And look, from a personal point of view, I'm going to wish Ireland all the best for the remaining two fixtures. I think he's right. You know, you just need to concentrate on getting the 6 points and then look, if other results go for you, great. If they don't, you know, you've done everything you can.
Yeah, just I can't stress enough how important it is that they don't take their eye off Friday. From picking up from Gerard's interview there, he said, you know, we should be able to get past Moldova without playing the likes of Wes Hoolan. I think that was slightly the attitude going over to Georgia, and that's what's cost Ireland here. Them, that game against Georgia, and then the follow-on feeling that led into the Serbia game and the performance there. A good first half, a second half shambolic. So
Kieran Dunphy's going to be a disaster if they don't play Wes out and they lose. So I mean,
all right, at that stage, John, if we haven't qualified, I'll be in a bar in Cardiff, and the drink deals look good, so there won't be a show next week, folks, because obviously I'm away in Cardiff. John is away doing a few bits and pieces as well, so we'll be back the week after that. That's this week's show, everyone. We want to thank you for joining us again. As we say every week, if you can subscribe on iTunes, just search Between the Stripes LOI podcast, hit the subscribe button, leave us a review. We're on Audioboom, Mixcloud, Pocket Casts and Podcast Republic, so loads of ways to find us. And make sure you give us a follow on Facebook and Twitter as well. John, thanks for joining me again this week, and we will speak to you again in a couple of weeks, folks.
Don't forget, subscribe on iTunes or alternatively follow us on Audioboom, Mixcloud, Pocket Casts or Podcast Republic, and never miss an episode. See you next week.